Kia ora, I'm Graham. Welcome to episode 14 of The Good Oil, Conversations with New Zealand Painters. In this episode, I visit Kirsten Carlin in her studio and home in Mount Roskill, Auckland. Kirsten has a Master of Fine Arts from the Glasgow School of Fine Art. Her work is held in numerous public and private collections, and she has exhibited widely, locally and internationally, including at the Auckland Art Gallery Toi o Tāmaki and the Dunedin Public Art Gallery. She is represented in New Zealand by Melanie Roger Gallery in Auckland and regularly exhibits with the Central Art Gallery in Ototahi. There are images of the works we talk about on the Good Oil Kirsten Carlin Instagram post for your reference. In this episode, you'll hear Kirsten speak about how she is influenced by slightly obscure Scottish painters, how much work never makes it out of her studio, how a throwaway exercise in problem solving opened up unexpected new approaches to painting, a constant awareness of the colour combinations the world presents, obsessing over Matisse, and some of her unlikely reference material. We started by talking about the influence of her grandmother, her first experiences of making art, and finding the right school to foster her talent.
I used to go around to my grandma's and do... She taught me crochet and knitting and sewing and embroidery and
so quite a textural introduction to art engagement.
Yeah, I think so. I remember I used to do a lot of drawing before I went to bed, like kind of strange families or just, yeah, doodling for like hours at a time. But other than that, we definitely didn't go to openings or anything like that.
Yeah. And when we were talking before, you mentioned switching to Western Springs School, which has a bit of a reputation for, being a creative secondary school. So influential as well, like that time at high school?
Yeah, I think so. I was trying to remember other influences, like growing up, and I had like about four people that I feel like, you know, encouraged me. One was like my standard four or year five or six teacher, who was just like really into art. Then I had a third form or nine, is it? Teacher at Mount Roskill Grammar. And she was super encouraging, but it wasn't enough art for me at Mount Roskill Grammar. It was very science and sports, and I just didn't feel comfortable there.
So you had an awareness then that you had a greater appetite for art than they were delivering.
Yeah, that's why I changed schools. And so that was the second person. And then I had, two great teachers at Western Springs. Printmaking teacher was... He was great. I didn't actually do painting in my final year there. I did printmaking and design. Yeah, but he was, Pete, he was just super encouraging. And then I did some night classes to kind of help my portfolio to get into art school. The tutor there, which was Wycliffe, actually, before it became like a, you know, the school that it is now, he gave me a huge box of his old oil paints.
Which, so you had, you'd never laid your hands on oil paints before?
Done in the sixth form.
Yeah. So that moment of laying your hands on that material for
that
the first
time. That
was
pretty cool. Yeah, and I went to a night class with adults. Yeah. And I was making these kind of quite wild abstract paintings. Like, actually, it's quite funny. They were quite thickly painted. And then, when I left, he gave me this big box of paint. So that was super encouraging as well.
Just to have that material to go away and play with.
Yeah, and someone to, like, think about you and want you to have it. And
at that time, you realised you wanted to be able to take the study further and therefore were thinking about that tertiary.
Yeah, I was thinking about boards, like a little bit of extra to help get in, because I guess I'd only done the printmaking. And.
But you decided by then that you wanted to get into...
Yeah. Well, in the sixth form, I was like on the verge of leaving school to do textile design. Huh. And then I kind of decided I probably shouldn't leave school at the end of the sixth form. So I kind of changed my mind there. And then I ended up going to Unitech because it was like a design school, but you could major in painting as well, or sculpture, or so I thought I would give myself options and go to Unitech, where I could go into graphic design or I could go into painting.
That multidisciplinary approach presumably helps inform the practice.
Yeah, and then but then it was like a real painting department after the first year, so it actually ended up working out.
But then you found your way to the Glasgow School of Art. Yeah. How did you find your way to Glasgow? How did you end up there?
I'd done a year. I'd done my PG dip at Elam. I didn't want to do the second year for whatever reason. I don't think the timing was quite right for me, or I always did the first year and just thought I'd see how I go. And then I started thinking, oh, I would love to study overseas. And then I applied and got in, and then I got some funding. And
being in Glasgow, that must have positioned you well to be able to investigate art history more, like being close to Europe and close to those European painters.
I was on a student budget, so I didn't go to Europe a lot until the end, but I was down in London like maybe every 6 weeks or something. So yeah, there was a lot of going to the galleries down there and going over to Edinburgh. And then at the end of our graduate show we had in Berlin, so I spent like 3 weeks there. And
there were artists that stood out for you at that time that has left an impression?
I guess one kind of moment I remember was seeing this one painting by, he's a bit obscure, but it's Samuel Peplow. We just saw this painting, I think it was in Edinburgh, and it was like this small kind of pinky toned painting with like, the quite thick paint, and I was like, oh, I want to try that. And this was after I'd actually graduated, and so I came back and kind of gave that a go. When I got back, I was having to paint in a very small space at that time, so I made these small kind of paintings. That's how I started working more in this style. So that was like, that was definitely an influence.
Encountering Sam Peplow for the first time, a really influential character.
Yeah, definitely. I just wish I'd discovered Anne Redpath when I was there, because I've kind of found her paintings later and I've never seen them in real life.
Oh, so. Because she is a Scottish painter,
Yeah.
Oh, so you didn't encounter her works while you were...
Yeah, it's just from my constant searching and looking things up and looking at things online. And yeah, so that's a little bit of a regret, but I'll just have to go back there soon.
But seeing Samuel's work in person... Was it that thick layering of oil paint and the texture that really left an impression?
Yeah, it really was, yeah. Kind of sounds a bit cheesy, but I was painting on... Before that, I was just painting in layers, letting the back dry, and then still painting in one go, but, like, yeah, not... Definitely not the way I'm painting now. Yeah.
Your practice feels like a celebration of material as much as anything else. So, the capability and potential, I suppose, of oil paint.
Mm.
Is that something you're wanting to really lean into as a painter?
Yeah, I think every time I make a painting, I'm trying to make the best painting I possibly can. And I guess, like, how I do it kind of very slowly has been changing over time. But, I let the paint just be itself, I think. I do put a little bit of something in it, but basically I just let it do its thing. And it's like some of my subject matter is chosen because it just works with paint so well.
Well, this isn't supposed to sound like a riddle, but does that make your painting practice a practice about painting? Like, it's as much about, pursuing the application of paint as it is about subjects.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they never become fully abstract, and it's not really like a language that I have learned. I like pictures. I like looking at pictures. I like, there's a process there, I guess. Yeah. I think someone might have mentioned this once, but they're like painting experiments, maybe.
Yeah. So you feel like you're experimenting with every painting as you're trying to create a better painting than last time.
Yeah. And I make a lot of paintings to get to the... I can make a lot of paintings, but not necessarily love them all. So I do edit.
Yeah, because we're sitting in your studio and looking around. There is a ton of work that is either finished or in progress, I'm assuming.
Yep, they're all finished.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, the ideas might be in progress, if you know what I mean.
So that's what I want to ask about, was what that editing process looks like for you. Of all the work that we're looking at, how much might make it into a gallery space?
I think it depends, like, whether I'm starting a new show, how long it is since I've been painting. Like, I generally, like, slowly warm up and then make a bunch of work that I'm not happy with, and then I'll get on a bit of a roll. And, yeah, so each painting is a kind of a practice for the next one, like you said. Yeah, I don't know, I'd probably be all right with maybe 40% of these.
And do you know really quickly which works work and which don't, or is there a slower process of understanding, which works are speaking to you and feeling like they're right?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's great when I know straight away. That makes me really happy. And it's not too bad when I don't know. But if I'm not sure, then I do have them sitting around for a while. I think if I'm not sure, more often than not, there'll be a no. But I do have the odd one that grows on me. So I, have them sitting around. Also, I have them sitting around so I can learn from them.
Mm.
Yeah, so I'll be like, oh, that those colours look pretty good together.
Yeah.
We'll try that again.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's right. So is that a process that you allow to happen over weeks? Like, because you also work in such thick oils that they're taking weeks to dry anyway. Mm. So you sit with the work for a few weeks to figure out which ones work.
Months.
Months.
Probably. Yeah.
And it's only sometimes at the end of a months long process that you look at a work and think, oh yeah, that's made the grade.
Or even longer than that. If I'm working towards a show, I will probably keep everything hanging around and then colour it at the end, and then either keep them in the studio to reference or put them aside.
Works are also highly textural. Like, we've talked a little bit about how much oil paint goes onto a support. Yeah. And like I talked to Jude Ray recently.
Yeah.
And she talks about the felt quality of vision. So works being really textural. You want to have that textural element, or is it just a byproduct of how much paint you like applying to a surface?
Yeah, that's another interesting and maybe tricky question. When I came back from Glasgow and I started painting wet on wet, I think the thickness was probably a byproduct because I wanted to work into the wet paint. And then I think I just started amping it up a bit. And then I've pulled it back at times as well, where it'll just be the occasional blob. Yeah, I think it's just about letting the paint do its thing. I do a paint the whole, the panel first, and then just, get...
You paint the whole panel in the sense of a ground, underpainting
a ground,
down?
But yeah, and then work straight into it. I would never leave it. There's no layers.
Well, if anything, there appears to be only two or three layers in your work. Like, you're not trying to build up lots of layers of paint.
No. So I think it's a bit of both, I think. I mean, the texture kind of repulses some people, I know.
Does it? That's funny. Because I think about it being such a lovely, luscious part of your practice.
Yeah, it's probably like, I don't know if I want this in the thing, but it's a bit, I don't think it's like, it's not like, painting at the moment is very... watered down layers. It's not like trendy.
So you don't feel like you're making very trendy work by piling lots of...
I feel like I've always been a little bit outside the... I think some people are drawn to it and some people aren't, but I don't care. I just like do what I want and I just work on making the best painting I can. And
like those textures, those thick licks of paint breathe so much 3D life into the subjects.
Yeah they do.
It's funny to think that some people are repulsed, is the word you used.
I guess it, like, there's a reference there to, like, painting that's come before, like, I don't know, something in the 70s or something, I don't know.
They feel really spontaneous and capture a sense of immediacy. So, like, with work, there's, like, waves of paint, it feels like, that literally have these little crests frozen in time.
Mm.
That's, something else you want to achieve with that texture.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. It definitely shows... that I've touched them and made them, and I just want them to look like I've had fun making them. I don't like looking at painting and thinking, oh, that must have been so painful for the artist to make that.
Actually, I think of one artist whose work I encounter regularly at a friend's house, Michael Hite, and I'm always astonished at how flat his paintings look, like how little paint there appears to be on the surface.
Yeah.
Whereas for you... it feels like your hand is really front and centre of the work. Like, you want to leave your hand in the painting as a matter of record. So again, another byproduct, or that's something you want to leave?
I guess that's just something that happens when you do make these kind of like gestural paintings, but it's not like a kind of conceptual decision.
So byproduct.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I guess it is, yeah. Even though I say I don't like to look at a painting and think, oh, that must have been so painful to make, sometimes I get jealous that I can't go in with more of a processor, slower, kind of have five paintings on the go and layer them and work on them. Like, sometimes I think that would make my life much easier, but it's just not the way I work.
Because from a process point of view, you're only working on one work at a time.
Yeah.
And you walk into the studio with a blank support and walk out a few hours later with the work complete.
Yeah, or... a few works complete.
A few works complete.
Yeah, I mean, especially the small ones. Yeah. The very time-consuming thing is getting my supports ready. So they get sanded and have some gack on them, and then, like, lots of coats of gesso and sanding. And
you're doing all of that support preparation yourself?
Yeah, I do it all myself. Because you can see the boards there. Yeah.
And that's because you want to be certain of the surface that you're working on?
I don't like fussiness. I like those boards. I've been working on them maybe for about 3 years now because they're really archival and they're not fussy, you know. Yeah, and I can turn them around and paint on the other side. And I like doing that because that's a part of my process where I do have control. It's a nice, like, turn off the brain kind of thing.
When you say they're not fussy, what do you mean by they're not a fussy support?
Like stretching canvas, looking after, uh-huh. Works on canvas, linen. I feel like they're hardier and...
So actually the painting part of the painting doesn't take as long as it does preparing a support.
No, probably not. And the paint mixing takes a long time. Yeah, so I always mix all my paints before I start.
Yeah, certainly when I talk about colour, like colour, how you manage colour and mixing.
Yeah, but it depends how big the work is. Like those ones obviously take a bit longer, and then if it's big work, it is going to take longer, but they're small work. That's why I enjoyed them so much, because I could just make them so quickly. And you're right, you had nothing, and then all of a sudden you got something you like.
Yeah, you've just pointed to bigger and smaller works. In the last few years, or 2 or 3 years, it feels like works have got both bigger and smaller, which is really interesting. Have the smaller works been an exercise in subtracting from the practice, or, you know, reducing the amount of marks that you're making?
You mean these really small works?
Yeah, the works that are, you know, like postcard, literally...
They're like, I like to say they're like the size of a novel, or those ones.
Yeah.
Subtracting from the work. I think I started making them when I was stuck. A little bit stuck. It was after COVID. I think I was a bit frustrated. And then I just kind of started making them as kind of like a drawing.
But for a start, they were just a way for you to be able to break out of a problem that you had.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they were like trying to get some ideas out. I painted like this it's like a little bit smaller than A4 size for a long time. I liked the idea of keeping it consistent. And they were always portraits, so I was doing these like portrait landscapes.
I've always enjoyed that irony, actually. It seems like a little in-joke of yours that you're painting landscapes on a portrait format.
So I was doing that for a long time, and then I went a little bit bigger, and then I went quite a bit bigger, and then I started making these kind of postcard-sized works, which were to help me get out of a problem, you're right.
And that's clearly worked. Like those.
It did work, yeah. But now it's time to move on.
Just stick with those smaller works for a moment longer. They've seemed really interesting in that they appear almost to be your most abstract work, in that there are only, you know, by comparison to bigger works, obviously, only a few marks in them.
That's true. That size gives you the chance to just really abbreviate, is that the right word, your work. When I was in Glasgow, I saw a show of Alex Katz's studies. So like they're like very small, kind of very quickly painted works with very few marks in them, and I was kind of quite taken by those. So I guess it's a scale thing, isn't it, where you don't need so much information. I also feel like I could get a bit wild with those small works. I tried to translate some of them into bigger works and they weren't quite working, but you can kind of get away with a bit more when they're smaller.
Well, those works, for listener reference, listeners, if you, and I'll include an image in the Instagram post for Kirsten's episode, but Cumulus Wandering, those series of paintings, they're quite wild. The mark making and the subject matter, I suppose, demands them.
I think that's quite a good title, because they did kind of wander around their subject matter.
But with minimal marks.
They are minimal marks, because I didn't scale down the brush that in proportion to the size, really.
That's the thing, right? There doesn't, and this is the case with lots of your works, there doesn't necessarily need to be a whole lot of information in the painting, right?
No. I'm quite drawn to artist studies, though, like that Matisse there. And
listener reference, we're looking at a Matisse study that's sitting on the wall of, or hanging on the wall of Kirsten's studio of... Fauve period painting?
It's early Fauve. It's like 1905, that one.
And the mark making.
Cool?
Yeah, it's great. But the mark making is relatively similar to yours, so there's some inspiration there.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I think I did a whole show where I was just obsessed with that painting.
Oh, that is as a single work.
Yeah.
Sticking with the smaller works for a moment, I'm curious to know like specifically how they helped you out of that problem or corner that you painted yourself into.
I think I was just trying to quickly get some ideas out. I guess they were studies, probably feeling a bit frustrated and not wanting to spend ages on a larger work that wasn't working. piling up works that I wasn't happy with. So then I just tried them out.
The more of those smaller works you produced, the more you looked at them and thought, bloody hell, these are working for
me. Yeah. I guess the minimal brushstrokes, the feeling like I could kind of like go a bit more wild on them, moving around the subjects was like a less of a series kind of situation. I was super happy with that show and felt like a bit of a breakthrough with the painting.
Yeah, beautiful show.
Yeah. I get told to go bigger by various people for whatever reason. And they like to do that at art school. And actually when I was doing a credit at art school recently, I told someone else to go big, which was really mean. But so I've kind of, you know what? I made those when I was trying to go bigger.
You made the smaller works
when
you were wanting to go bigger.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why in the last 2 years we've seen both work get bigger and smaller.
Yeah, because it's like a bit of a push and pull situation trying kind of work at a larger scale.
Yeah.
And then making these.
Well, yeah, so there's been those larger works as well. Like, is that's been an exercise in being able to expand possibilities, like kind of open the throttle up of a paintbrush? Like, what are you finding with those larger works?
Yeah, I just disclaimer, the larger works are large for me, but might not be large for other people.
Oh, yeah, so maybe we should put a size on them for listeners.
Yeah,
They're sort of 500 by 600?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just like you have your painting kind of language, don't you, and your way you work, and then to kind of change that up is quite hard, but then kind of feels like you're ready. So I guess I'd kind of felt like I'd exhausted what I wanted to do and just ready to try something else. And so just ready for the challenge after COVID. And I'd done that lilac lemon lime show.
Because they were slightly larger.
Yeah, they were slightly larger, yeah. And they were, if you compare them to these new paintings, they were quite different.
Yeah.
And the paint, even though it's still, there's still like obvious blobs of paint, there's less paint on those. And that was, if I look back at the last 10 years, that was like a change for me.
In fact, that series of paintings, so for listener reference, if you're wanting to look these up and find them, the series was called Lilac Lemon Lime. That's, and those works are probably the ones that leave the most negative space of all your paintings.
Yeah, that's a nice way to put it. Definitely embracing the kind of sketching over the top. I guess with Through the Trees, I'd kind of started doing the kind of the outline and the flourishes and whatnot. So yeah, that was kind of like almost like the peak.
And then you decided to pull back.
Yeah, and then I just fully embraced the paint again. And that's, when I decided to try and go bigger, and that's when I went a lot smaller.
But now into these, again, larger by your standards, 500 by 600.
Yeah. So I've definitely just using what I've learned from the small ones. So yeah, no, it's worked in the end.
Subjects always seem relatively generic, or maybe I should say unidentifiable, especially the landscape work. Do you want those images to be a little vague? You don't want them to be specific landscapes that people can identify. Yeah.
Choosing something that someone easily recognises makes me feel like I can muck around with it more.
Yeah.
So it kind of comes back together in the person's...
Easily recognise in a figurative sense, not in a literal, I know where that landscape is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I might work from a photo of the Milford Sounds, but kind of like not necessarily want it to give a bit of a feeling perhaps of the South Island, like those two, but kind of be nowhere in particular. I get my, this is slightly unrelated, but I get my source imagery from all over the place. Like it could be like a photo on the internet or like a op shop painting or another painting or...
Well, historically, including the property press. I mean, the property press is nothing sacred, Kirsten. So I'm...
I did that because I just wanted an unlimited supply of imagery. Yeah. And I needed to get it from somewhere, and it just felt very relevant at the time. Yeah, you didn't really see it in the work, but yeah.
So the property press informed an entire show, right?
Yeah. Gardens, yeah. But very manipulated by me. I kind of, sometimes I talk about the subjects that I work from, like, because I almost, I'm not like Bonnard and work from memory. I'll work from something and I'll kind of think about them as a skeleton for the painting. Yeah, rather than like being the subject, they're like the skeleton to create on top of to and then create apply the painting.
Your, yeah. And then apply your own structure around
does
it.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Or apply your own flesh around it.
And then I go through phases where I like it. I guess I'm just more into the process of the painting and the subject doesn't really matter anymore. And I guess that's the property press images. They were just like so cropped in from the real estate photos that they didn't matter. They were like just kind of a very neutral thing to kind of work from.
So they're only So that's the case with all reference material. They're only kind of useful to a point. They're only a vague reference for subject.
Yeah, yeah.
So we wanted to, you know, talk about art history and your work. And Francis Hodgkins is someone that you're a really big fan of, right? So I was curious to know what it is about her work and, if not legacy, that you're drawn to.
I think I'm drawn to, like, her as a person, like, her spirit, her, like, bravery and kind of free spirit. She was just amazing what she did, like, at that time, moving overseas and just living for her art. And it definitely comes out in the work.
I wanted to go back to, like, we've talked a little bit about process already, but I wanted to go back to talking about process in some detail. So where does work start for you? What's the first inception of a painting?
Like how I make it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've usually got like kind of ideas from like the last show that I've made. I usually finish an exhibition and I usually take a break while the exhibition's on because I can't quite bring myself to start working again until it comes down.
So you need to clear your head from that.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, interesting. Yeah. So even if I try, it doesn't usually work. Yeah, so I'll probably have that in my head, like the last show, and then you'll see if you look around, usually use a light colour under painting. Sometimes it will get a bit brighter, but it's usually like it's definitely a colour. I never use grey or ochre. It's something fun.
But from a process point of view, it sounds like you start with a vague sense of a series or subject that you want attend to.
I'll kind of have a general idea of what I want to do. Yeah, like I'm working on a show at the moment and I've kind of got this idea of creating these like maps of gardens. So like, you know, like landscape designers do drawings. Yeah. I was like, yeah, that kind of like imaginary garden, but I'll map it out in a painting. So that's what I'm working on at the moment. So that gives you an
idea. These are some of the works that are behind me as we sit in the studio.
They're like a precursor to that. This is actually quite a fresh new idea. Yeah, so these are leading on to that. These kind of got me there. So yeah, so I have like an idea in my head. I will have found a bunch of imagery to work from by that point.
So on the idea that you're talking about at the moment, like landscape sketches of gardens, do you have, you've got some reference material that you're working
no,
to?
No, I'm... Yeah, I do. I have a little bit. Yeah. But it's going to be a little bit different for me because it's going to be, I shouldn't talk about things that haven't happened yet, but I'll probably get like imagery from multiple sources for those. So it could be a bit different. So look out for those.
Oh, great. And that's, that'll be next year, 2024.
Yeah, mid next year. But yeah, normally I have an idea of what I want to work from. Like if we think about the property press, I'd have like a whole pile of those. And Or if I'd like, I did that show where I was just looking at the Auckland Art Gallery collection and just working from there. Cumulus Wandering was a little bit different because that was just like a bit less narrow, a bit wider. But yeah, so I generally have my images on my phone or like printed out and I'm ready to go.
But then with those images, you end up applying a degree of abstraction to them. So again, you want to make them, as we talked about before, apply a degree of vagueness to them.
Yeah, but that happens when I paint them. So, I do watercolours and I do some drawing, but it goes straight from your image to the painting.
So on the support, do you start by sketching out, before you apply paint, do you start by sketching out any structure or is it all quite intuitive, that composition approach?
Yeah, no, I will sketch out, just lightly sketch out with the paintbrush. Some vague composition. Yeah, like I was saying, like the skeleton, just like a few lines and then I'll work from there. So I'll still be referencing back to the photo a little bit, but then after a while I stop looking and I'm just working on my painting.
So you transition from that skeletal structure into a process that's really intuitive in terms of filling out the rest of the painting.
Yeah, that's right. The marks I use depends on what I'm painting. I'm loving these gardens because it's just like paint on the panel, and it doesn't take much to make something look like a blade of grass or a flower. Or...
Yeah, so again, there's quite minimal marks to be able to create something that's representational.
Exactly. I still like the idea of, like, yeah, you squint and then you can't kind of tell what I've painted it, kind of, though not that far away from being abstract.
So you're settling into that approach of painting. It feels like looking at works from 2012, 2013, so when you first started showing with Melanie Roger, that you were really comfortable with material and applying it to support. So how did you get to that? I'm assuming you didn't arrive fully formed as a painter with those with those works.
I feel like I've got two, like, kind of... The way I work is kind of broken up before I went to Glasgow and when I came back. And these were, like, after I came back. Yeah. And that's when I, you know, I'd seen the Peplo painting and I was, like, working in this smaller scale and wet on wet. I'd probably been doing that for about a year at that point when I had the show with Melanie. So, yeah, just embracing the paint moving around on the wet surface.
And learning some tricks along the way as to how to manage the material like that.
Exactly, and then just keeping the subject really simple, which was just like bouquets of flowers. Yeah, no, I was definitely having fun. Yeah, and they were nice and small too. They were like about, you know, just smaller than an A4. So that allowed me to just make heaps and figure them out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'd made some work similar before that, but these are becoming kind of more flatter and probably going down a more abstract route. But when I look at these now and compare them to the work I've made here, I can see similarities and I feel like I've gone down some different routes to come back to these works. Yeah,
there must be a few tricks you've learned along the way, because I look at your work and sometimes it's really tidy layering, and then other times you let, you know, one layer of paint catch the other so it grabs and draws in color and mixes color a little bit. So are there a few specific tricks that you're quite cognizant of using?
I think I just like the paint application has become thicker and thinner and thicker and thinner, and just trying things out kind of each time I have a show.
Thicker and thinner in that you apply different amounts of medium to paint.
And it's not necessarily different amounts of medium. I always add the, like, just a few drops of a schminker medium to help with the surface, help it all stay. It adds a bit of a gloss to it. You know, I don't get any dry patches or whatever. It's more like how much paint I'm putting onto the panels.
So implying that you're almost applying paint as it comes out of the tube?
Pretty close to it, yes. But I do, they have a tiny little bit of something added. I don't do too much to the paint. I don't force it to do anything that it shouldn't.
I remember thinking for a while that your practice felt like psychedelics in pastels, almost Timothy Leary meets Wes Anderson. But the colour choices, you know, has really varied in the last 10 years. How much time do you spend considering colour and colour mixing?
Definitely consider colour all the time. I'm like, if I see something like, you know, a bucket next to a wall with a good colour accommodation, I'll take a photo. Yeah, I'm always taking photos. I've got ridiculous amount of photos on my phone.
So your eye is tuned to colour reference all the time?
Yeah.
So that colour reference might come from anywhere?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it comes from making the paintings and working with colour, but also, yeah, definitely from external sources, for sure, yeah.
And then you're spending a long time in the studio mixing to get the colours as close as you possibly can to that reference material?
Yeah, I try to, yeah. I mean, like I said before, I try not to be too fussy with what I do. You can probably tell. But, yeah, that could even be the starting point for painting, yeah, like kind of a weird orange and a yellow that, you know, sit next to each other.
From a process point of view, it sounds like you spend at least as much time preparing a support and preparing paint before it gets anywhere near the support as you do applying it. So that part of the process is at least as important to you as actually applying to the support.
Yeah, no, it's very important that I get the colours all mixed first. And so obviously I've thought about what's going down before it happens. Yeah, I occasionally I'll like mix something up and add it later. But with the small works, I would say the same amount, if not less time, to getting them ready.
And does the subject matter influence what the colour choice is going to be? Or do you draw in, you know, that influence of fauve and make it reasonably abstract?
sometimes yes and sometimes no. Sometimes I like to keep it close to the subject, or it's like definitely helped me choose the colours, or sometimes I'll just want to make it an outrageous colour, like a flower that shouldn't be that colour, or an orange mountain. I think it's whatever's going to make the painting look good.
So lots of colour theory going on in the background, regardless of what the subject suggests.
I think so, yeah. But my own kind of weird colour theory.
What is your own weird colour theory?
No, it's just like what I've worked out myself from making my paintings and what works. It's like kind of like almost like muscle memory, I think, just knowing that something's going to work to make a painting pop or to make it sit right.
And that's referencing back to your own work?
Yeah.
So just a mental catalogue of what's worked and what's not.
Yeah.
So you're a little bit of a colour theory nerd, but in your own... in your own way.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah. I guess with just, documenting what I see. I mean, it's not like to a scientific level. It's more like what's working on the...
So your own intuition again.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. But, with practice, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't, there's that orange with that kind of sap green, and that magenta, that shouldn't work, but that's kind of working to me.
Oh, absolutely. We are sitting looking at work in Kirsten's studio as reference. And it seems that you contrast sometimes, like that magenta that we're looking at is actually quite bright compared to some of the greens that are almost back to pastels.
Yeah, well, if you were talking about that 2013 show, and like something that was driving me then was like kind of contrasting like these browns with like these bright colours. Yeah, it was definitely like something I was thinking about when I was making the work, and I've kind of moved on from there. I don't, it's not so clear cut, but I think it's definitely still influences me to have something murky to go with something bright. And
so to keep playing with those colors and see what contrasts.
Exactly.
So keeping the supports a single size for a single show gives you that framework to work with to accommodate the intuition.
I think so, yeah. I think, yeah, definitely. That's why I do it, yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about supports a little bit more, maybe. So you work always with quite firm supports. So board, aluminium are the two main preferences.
I just work on aluminium solely now. Yeah, so it's aluminium composite. And
why, like, board? Why board for a start, and why have you moved to aluminium?
I used to work on stretched canvas, but I just didn't really need to anymore. Like, can't really see the texture of the canvas, and I didn't really need the kind of bounciness of it. And I just didn't.
You didn't like the bounciness of canvas?
I just don't really need it when I make the work. I don't know. Yeah, I don't like it, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, a well stretched canvas shouldn't be too bouncy, but.
So that moved you to working on board then?
Yeah. I didn't... The rigid structure was fine for me. So then I started moving... Then I started working on board, and then I just discovered aluminium composite panels, which are more archival.
So that's the main reason to moving to the aluminium, is the for archival reasons?
I think so, yeah. They're just so sturdy, and also with board, like hardboard or whatever you decide to use, you can only go so big without having to brace them. So I can go quite big with these. They're fine just like that, and then they get framed. So, yeah, it just gives me a lot of freedom, really.
A nice, easy platform to work on.
Yeah, exactly. And I go to this plywood city down in Penrose, so I just call them up and tell them what size I want, and they cut it with their guillotine, so it's all very easy and...
Nice.
Yeah, it's good. But they need a bit of, treating to get them to paintable.
So how are you managing that treatment of aluminium supports too?
Oh, just, you just have to do things in the right order, like the sanding and the gack and the gesso and, But if I'm ever not sure, I just call Studio Arts and ask their advice.
Yeah.
But, I've been working like this for a few years now, so, yep.
To talk about tools a little bit, it looks like from looking at your work, it looks like you work with an almost uniform size of brushes. Like they look, it looks like there's only two or three different size of brushes that you work with. Is that about right?
Yeah, probably. I probably should use more. Sometimes I use more, but I do have my favourites. It depends on the work, but the smaller works have slightly different brushes, so maybe four brushes for each work.
But in sizes of only ever kind of 1 centimetre to 2 or 3 centimetres wide, maybe?
Yeah. I do. If you look closely, you can see like that one. You can see that there's bigger brush in the underpainting in the background. Yeah. So well, I do have some wider ones.
But you're letting it, like, you say underpainting, but lots of that underpainting, quote unquote, remains really present in the work.
Especially that painting in particular. Yeah.
But looking around at these, so again, we're talking about slightly larger sized works of Kirsten's. That's the case with quite a few of those.
If you look at those two behind you, which have got the like the kind of bright yellow. Yeah. So it's like it's a base layer. Maybe that's a better way to describe it rather than underpainting.
Right.
Yeah, it's a base layer. Yeah, let's call it that.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, and most of them are the filbert brushes. I do have some kind of, of just the standard kind of straight ones.
So a flat brush rather than a bright brush.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no. I don't wash my brushes as much as I should, but I kind of like that. I don't like a brand new brush.
You don't like a brand new brush?
No.
So you like a brush that has a little history to it? Because of the way that it ends up applying paint to the surface?
I think so, yeah. And I'm very fussy. I like a short bristle. Yeah. Because I think that gives me a little bit more control, even not that you can tell, yeah. Also, occasionally I'll use a rag or something to put the base layer on.
Occasionally. I was going to ask if there were other materials, a rag?
Yeah, occasionally, yeah. Yeah, not so much for the smaller works, but you're probably with that one.
But there's no palette knife that you're using?
No, definitely don't use a palette knife.
Always just brush the occasional rag.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some chunks of paint on there, but it's not like, next level 5 tubes or 1 painting kind of situation.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, again, this newer work feels like there is, I mean, it's the underpainting, but there's more kind of negative space in these works than there has been.
Yeah.
Is that because you're wanting to feel like you're wanting to open work up a little bit?
Yeah, I guess I want them to look fresh. I always want my work to look fresh, but, it's a bit of a challenge to see how it will work with the smaller amount of paint or brush marks.
It looks like with this work, with there being a lot more, room and the underpainting being allowed to show more, that they're a lot more gestural even than, your older work.
Yeah, definitely.
It feels like you're even getting looser with the brush marks.
Yeah, and I think that scaling up has helped with that. But definitely a very loosely painted garden.
So with those supports getting larger, your painting is getting even looser.
It is at the moment, yeah.
Does that feel nice? Like you're finding a different freedom?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I mean, I took a little while to figure out how to make these, but, I think I'm happy with the results.
Yeah, I think you should be.
Yeah.
Last question. Removing any limit of budget or, whether a work is held in a public institution, what work or artist work in general would you love to live with?
I think a late 70s, kind of early 80s Joan Mitchell painting would be good. I sent through one to you, which is called Wood, Wind, No Tuba, which is an interesting title, but I could definitely live with that work. Lots of mauve and orange, and it would look pretty good next to my work, and I'd be very happy.
It's the colour that appeals.
I think it's the colour that appeals, yeah, and just like, the looseness, and I'd be happy living with that work. And then, a Bonnard garden would be good too. I'll put one of those opposite.
Thanks for listening to the episode. Your next opportunity to see new work from Kirsten is in a late 2023 group exhibition show at the Central Art Gallery in Christchurch. And then in May 2024 at Melanie Roger Gallery in Auckland. Having had a sneak peek at the work in Kirsten's studio for that show, it will present a collection of larger, looser paintings that will see her working in an even freer hand that I promise will impress. Or you can contact Melanie Roger Gallery in Auckland and the Central Art Gallery in Ototahi for available work. Please join me for episode 15 of The Good Oil. Until then, ka kite anō.